good to see you guys. Everybody have a good 4th yesterday?
Yeah.
Saw some fireworks?
Yeah.
All right, awesome. I didn't have to go anywhere to see fireworks because I live in Bainbridge. It was pretty awesome. I was just in the backyard and it was all around and it was like a grand finale for 2 hours nonstop. It was incredible and it was just awesome. So good times. All right, so we've been talking for several weeks now about accepting the unacceptable. And throughout this series, we've talked about some people in the Bible who had to face the unacceptable. We talked about Job and all of the tragedy and the confusion that he experienced, and yet he remained faithful to God through all of that. And we talked about Paul, a guy who was persecuted and harassed and physically abused and imprisoned, and he continued to be faithful to God in the middle of all of that. And we talked about these three men who refused to bow down in worship to this false god. They stood alone, honoring God, and they did so knowing that they could face a horrible death, and yet they chose to obey God anyways. And there's tons of examples we could look at, aren't there, in the scriptures of people who faced some really terrible situations. But there are a few people in the Bible who suffered worse injustice at the hands of others and more persistent setbacks than a guy named Joseph. And Joseph's story goes way back in the Old Testament to Genesis chapter 37. Let's just give a quick recap. If you're not familiar with the story, or if you are, this would be a good review. Just a quick recap of Joseph's story. Joseph was one of several sons. He was the youngest. He had several older brothers, and he was the favored child. He was the guy that, he got all the good stuff from his parents. They loved him more than they loved the other sons, and that's never a good thing, right? That's a bad parenting method, in case you're wondering. Don't do that. But they favored Joseph. They gave him special gifts that they didn't give to the other sons. Joseph was a tattletale. He tattled on his older brothers, and his dad encouraged that. Like, there were times he would say, hey, go find out what they're up to and then report back to me, right? So it's just really not a good family dynamic. And it got to where, of course, there was a lot of tension with Joseph and his older brothers. It was not a happy situation. And one day it hit a boiling point to where they took Joseph and they threw him into an empty well, and they talked together about how to murder Joseph and get away with it. And as they're talking about this, some slave traders are passing by, and one of them got the bright idea and said, hey, we can make some money off of our brother. So they sold their own brother into slavery. Like, that's some family dysfunction going on there, right? So Joseph is sold into slavery, and then they take, Joseph in the coat of many colors, a special coat that his dad made for him. They took that coat, they slaughtered an animal, and they covered his coat with blood, took it back to their dad and said, hey, dad, terrible news. You know, your son, he's been killed by a lion. And so, like, again, this is not a healthy family. So Joseph is sold into slavery. And while he's there, he's bought by this guy named Potiphar, who was a really high-ranking member in Pharaoh's government. And Joseph, while he was there, he was a man of integrity, and he worked hard. He did all the right things. He gained the trust of Potiphar, and things are starting to look up for Joseph, right? He's getting more freedom, and it starts to look like things are going to turn around and go really in a good direction for Joseph. And then all of a sudden, he's falsely accused of doing something he didn't do, and he's thrown into prison. And while he's in prison, again, he's faithful, he's honest, he's a man of integrity, he does all the right things. He follows the rules, he's the model prisoner, he helps other people out. On one occasion, there was a guy that came to Joseph and said, hey, I had this really weird dream. I'm kind of upset because I don't know what it means. Could you help me out? And God gave Joseph wisdom and the ability to interpret that dream. And Joseph said, here's what the dream means. You're going to be a free man. God is showing you that you're going to be released from prison. And the guy was just amazed. He said, wow, this is awesome. And he gets released from prison. And he told Joseph, he said, listen, you've done such a good thing for me. I will not forget you. I'll make sure you get justice and you get out of here. And as soon as he got out of prison, he completely forgot about Joseph. Years go by. And one day the Pharaoh has a dream. And none of his advisors can figure out what the dream means. And so this guy who had been released from prison, he's working for Pharaoh. And he's like, oh, man, I remember this guy I met way back when in prison. His name is Joseph. And I bet he could tell you what your dream means. And so they have Joseph come and stand before Pharaoh. And again, God gives him wisdom. And Joseph says, Pharaoh, here's what that dream means. There's going to be 7 years of abundant, like, just incredible prosperity. The crops are going to be amazing. We're going to have tons of food. It's going to be great. But then that's going to be followed by 7 years of famine. And a lot of people are going to starve to death unless you prepare for it. And Joseph, under God's wisdom and anointing, tells Pharaoh, here's what I would do if I was in your situation. And he comes up with a plan. And Pharaoh looks at Joseph and basically says, okay, you're hired. And Joseph becomes the right-hand man to the Pharaoh. So, I mean, it's a pretty incredible story because he goes from being a slave to a prisoner to the second most powerful man in the most powerful country on the planet. So his story, it's a wild story, right? Because it takes a lot of twists and turns. There are times when it looks like things are going to go really bad and then it kind of turns around. And there's other times where it looks like things are going to go really well. And then the rug gets pulled out from under him and he's worse off than he was before. And it takes forever for God's plan to show up and to work out in Joseph's life. In other words, his life story is a lot like ours, isn't it? Isn't that true of us a lot of times? We think this is going to happen and then something totally hits us sideways out of the blue and we're like, where did that come from? And what's God even doing here? How is this all going to work out? And so we're going to spend a few weeks looking at Joseph's story. Today, we're just going to look at the very beginning and then we're going to jump ahead to the very end. And over the next 2 weeks, we're going to kind of fill in the blanks. So his story begins in Genesis chapter 37, way, way back in the beginning. In Genesis 37, and the first few verses of Genesis 37 tell us a bit about his family and growing up and those kind of things. That first chapter where Joseph is mentioned, by the end of that chapter, he's sold into slavery. So that's how quickly the story is moving, right? So we come to the very last verse of Genesis 37, verse 36. Here's what it says. They sold Joseph to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. Potiphar was captain of the palace guard. That's how the chapter ends. He sold into slavery. Now, so let's dive into chapter 38 because we want to see what God's going to do, right? Because that's how these stories work out, isn't it? Something bad happens, God shows up, a miracle happens, and it all works out. That's how these stories tend to work. So let's see what happens next. When you come to chapter 38, you know what chapter 38 tells us about Joseph? Absolutely nothing. In that entire chapter, Joseph is mentioned a grand total of 0 times. Not a single mention of Joseph in that entire chapter. So chapter 37 ends with him being sold as a slave. Chapter 38 takes this really weird detour into this like seriously perverted story about a woman who seduces her own father-in-law and becomes pregnant. Ick, right? And then like the rest of the chapter is just all these men and women doing what men and women do when they don't care what God thinks. And there's just all this stuff happening, and that's the whole chapter. There's no mention of Joseph at all. He's completely overlooked. So chapter 37 ends with he's sold into slavery, and now we move into what looks like an episode of The Bachelor. I mean, it's more like a daytime soap opera than a chapter in the Bible. And to add to the weirdness of this, chapter 38 starts with the birth of a guy. I'm not even kidding you. This dude's name was Er. Like, who would do that to their child? Name their son Er. Like, how did that even happen? Like, were people asking them, they didn't have a name for their kid yet, and somebody said, what's your son's name going to be? And they're like, I don't know, Er, and it just stuck. I mean, how does that happen? It's just a weird name, right? So there's this guy named Er, and the first few verses talk about his birth and so on. And then his story comes to a really abrupt end. In verse 7, it says this, but Er was a wicked man in the Lord's sight, so the Lord took his life. Pretty nonchalant, but like this guy was so evil, God took his life. Like, that's amazing. It doesn't say, you know, he was in a car accident or he was killed in battle or he had some disease or no, it was nothing like that. Like, God actively intervened and took this guy's life. How evil do you have to be for that to happen? And that actually happens several times in this chapter where people are doing such horrific things that God steps in and says, nope, not going to let that go on any longer. Game over. And then more people step in and do more evil things. And that's the whole chapter. So chapter 38 is filled with some really sick and perverse stuff happening. And so you have to ask, okay, what's going on with Joseph here? What happened? I mean, you just told us he was sold into slavery. And now we take this weird detour, all this nasty stuff. What happened to Joseph? What's interesting is this. In the middle of all of the evil and perversion happening in the world at the time Joseph was sold into slavery, in the middle of everything else that was going on, we're about to find out in the very next chapter, God did not forget about Joseph at all. In fact, what's interesting is chapter 39 picks up exactly where chapter 37 left off. And it's as though chapter 38 never even happened. So look again, the last verse in chapter 37, it says, they sold Joseph to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. Potiphar was captain of the palace guard. Let's jump ahead to chapter 39. The very first verse says this, he was purchased by Potiphar, an Egyptian officer. Potiphar was captain of the guard for Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. Does that verse sound familiar? Like it's almost word for word, right? It's almost exactly the same verse. It's like the author is saying, okay, so like I was telling you before we were interrupted, Joseph was sold into slavery and he was bought by a guy named Potiphar. So why this crazy detour in chapter 38? Doesn't that seem odd? I think that detour is amazing. And I think that detour is there for a reason. It means something. Here's what it means. Chapter 38 is a reminder to us that in the middle of everything else that was happening in the world, God was still with Joseph. God was still at work in Joseph's life. He still heard Joseph's cries for help. God was still working out his plan for Joseph. In fact, the very next verse tells us that the Lord was with Joseph. And it goes on to say his presence in Joseph's life was so obvious that other people noticed it. So even though there was some really bad stuff happening in the world, some really evil stuff, a lot of stuff going on, in the middle of all of that, God was still fully aware of what was happening in the life of this one man, and God was still working out his plans for Joseph. What does that mean for you and me? Maybe in whatever situation you find yourself, you look at the world around you and you see all this other stuff happening, all this big, important stuff happening. Have you ever wondered, in the middle of all of that, does God even notice me? Like, I'm not that big of a deal. I'm just me, right? I'm just a guy. I'm not popular. I'm not famous. I'm not wealthy. I've got a few hundred followers on Facebook. I've never trended on Twitter. Like, I'm just a guy living in a tiny little town in central Pennsylvania. And meanwhile, there's all this big stuff happening around the world, right? Big, like, important stuff happening with important people that have a lot of influence in entire nations and really massive, major, important stuff. So I'm sure that's what matters to God, right? Have you ever felt that way? You ever asked that question? I've had those conversations with people. It's like, God must be paying attention to all that stuff. Why would God, like the stuff happening in my life can't possibly be that important to God in the middle of everything else that's happening. And yet chapter 38 here, Joseph's story is a great reminder to us that no matter what else is happening in the world around us, no matter what else is going on, God is still at work in our lives too. He hasn't forgotten us. He hasn't given up on us. He's still working out his plan and his purposes for your life, no matter what else is happening around us. Somebody needed to hear that today. Because you feel like you're in chapter 38 right now. Something terrible has happened in your life. And there's all this other stuff going on in the world, and you might feel like, well, God must be paying attention to that. Why would God even notice me? Is he even aware of what's going on? Does it even matter to him? Does he even care? When the truth is, even if you're in chapter 38 and there's a lot of bad things happening in the world around you, the truth is this, God still knows what is happening to you. He still cares about you. He still has a plan he's working out for you, and he is still God with us, with you. And there's a lot of Joseph's story that's still ahead, but we're going to jump ahead 10 chapters to chapter 49. Because there's a really important summary of his life that I want you to see. This is years later. So Pharaoh implemented Joseph's plan, and millions of people were saved from starvation, including Joseph's family, who lived a long ways off. There was no food where they were, so they came to Egypt so they could get food. And they didn't know at the time that Joseph was the guy, and ultimately it was revealed to them. And so now this is years after that. And their father, Jacob, he is about to die. He's a very old man, and he calls all of his family together. And so everybody's there. Joseph is there, and all of his brothers who had sold him into slavery years before, they're all gathered together. And Jacob calls his sons up one by one and places his hand on them and pronounces a blessing over each one of them. And here's what he says about Joseph, using figurative language to describe what Joseph has gone through. Here's what he says in verse 23. Archers attacked him savagely. They shot at him. and harassed him. That's how Jacob describes what happened to his son. His son who was hated by his brothers. His son who was sold into slavery by his own brothers. His son who was falsely accused and thrown into prison. His son who someone said, hey, when I get out, I'll put in a good word for you. I won't forget you. And then forgot him for years. And yet in the middle of all of that, Joseph remained faithful to God. And Jacob says he was attacked savagely, shot at, and harassed. That one sentence covers years of trials in Joseph's life, doesn't it? And yet notice what he says next. But his bow remained taut, and his arms were strengthened by the hands of the mighty one of Jacob, by the shepherd, the rock of Israel. That phrase really grabbed my attention. His bow remained taut. Now remember, he's describing a long period of time in Joseph's life. And he says through all of that, his bow remained taut. So I asked Dwight, our resident archer, to bring his bow. Come on over here so that you're in the camera too. It's not loaded, so you're safe. I promise no harm will come to anyone. So go ahead and pull back. That's what it means when his bow was taut. Your bow remaining taut means this: you're ready, you're watching. And it also means this, the fact that he says his bow remained taut, it remains taut until when? When is it not taut any longer? When you release the arrow, right? Your bow remains taut until you release the arrow. So in other words, Joseph didn't release the arrow too quickly. He waited and watched for God's timing. He didn't rush things. He didn't try to force something to happen. Ahead of God's plan, he waited until God said, go. So now, if you pull back and hold like Dwight's doing right now, what's going to happen after a while? Your arms are going to get tired. Your arms are going to start to shake, right? Now, Dwight's cheating because he has a compound bow. But, I mean, back then they didn't have those, right? So just imagine how long can you do that until your arms get tired and start to shake, right? Go ahead, Dwight. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. So Jacob says, yeah. Jacob says that Joseph's bow remained taut through all of that, being thrown into a well, being sold into slavery. His bow remained taut. Being falsely accused, thrown into prison, his bow remained taut. Being forgotten about by someone who promised, I won't forget you. In the middle of all of that, his bow remained taut for all of that time. How did he do that? How is that possible to be that patient and to wait on God's timing and to trust him in the middle of that? How is that even possible? Look again at the last part of the verse here. He says, his arms were strengthened by the hands of the mighty one, the shepherd, the rock of Israel. There's a lot in those names. The mighty one. That speaks of God's strength. The one who is bigger than any problem we will ever face. The shepherd. That speaks of the fact that he knows us and he loves us. It speaks of his care and his compassion for us. The rock. That speaks of his dependability. The fact that he is the God who is dependable and he is our solid foundation. The shepherd, the rock, the mighty one. That God strengthened Joseph's arms as he stayed prepared. And I think it's interesting how Jacob words this. He says his arms were strengthened. He doesn't say that God pulled back for him. He doesn't say that God shot the arrow for him. He doesn't say that God fought the battle for him. Something was required of Joseph too. He had to be ready. He had to wait. He had to watch. He had to remain vigilant. And as he was, as he did those things, God strengthened him. As he did those things, God gave him wisdom so he would know when to release that arrow and in what direction. So maybe you're here today and you're in the middle of a battle and you're exhausted. Because you've been fighting and you've been trying and it's been a long time. And you might be at a point where you're ready to just say, I can't do this anymore. You're wiped out. And everything inside of you says, you know, I just need to put the bow down, put the arrow down. It's never going to work out. I'm done trying. Can I just encourage you from Joseph's story? One of the things his story teaches us is this. that when we're in those times when everything is crazy around us, God still knows what's happening in your life. It still matters to him. And as we stay ready, as we make that decision, I will not give up. I'm not going to give in to despair. I'm not going to quit. As we make that decision, he comes alongside us to strengthen our arms and to enable us to trust his timing, to enable us to continue to press through even when we can't do it ourselves. And maybe you're here today and you need to invite him to do that for you. And maybe you need somebody to meet with you and to pray with you, or some people to gather around you and to pray with you, that God would strengthen your arms because you're getting tired out. He's the God that we can go to in those times. He is our rock. He is our strong one. He is our shepherd. He knows us. He cares. And he's promised he would never abandon us. So I'm going to pray in just a minute, and then I just want to ask if there's anyone here that maybe you just want us to pray for you today, and we can pause everything and we can do that right now. But let me just pray first of all. God, I want to thank you that you are God with us. I thank you that no matter what else is happening in our lives, you are there for us. You are with us. You never abandon us. You are the God who strengthens our arms when we are tired out. And I pray that you would do that today for anyone who is struggling and ready to give in to the exhaustion, ready to give in to the despair and the hopelessness. God, that today would be a day of renewal. Today would be a day of restoration. We invite you, Holy Spirit, to do your work. In Jesus' name, amen.